The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 3rd, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us on a really nice day outside in the Auburn Opelika area. Sun is shining. It's not in the teens in terms of temperature. I mean, things are looking up around here. I saw a 6 in the forecast coming up later this week. This weekend's supposed to be nice. I mean, maybe we're coming out of this winter-ish that stuff that we're in. I don't know. So, beautiful day in Auburn. Beautiful day to be on the radio. We appreciate you being with us. Christian, happy Tuesday, sir. How are you on this sunny day in Auburn?
Yeah, I know. It feels almost a little bit weird. It brought me back to just about every other day that we've had other than what this three-week stretch was of cold, but I'm sure tomorrow it'll be back to 24, or tomorrow might be 86, and you'll just have to take it and run with whatever. I'm looking over here at all these NBA trades that are going on right now. I know we're not spending a lot of time on it, but a wild 12 hours, 15, 18 hours that have gone on in the NBA world.
A couple more days to go.
The trade deadline. And, man, you got to watch the video earlier before we went on today of the announcer just ripping James Harden
about,
he's not the beard, he's not the solution, he's the problem.
He's the problem. It's a guy from, like, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I think it was on Bally Sports for Dallas the Mavericks on their pregame show, and this guy said, pump this in the Clippers locker room, I want James Harden to hear this, and just went off on the guy
about
for, like,
two minutes.
And when it happened, the internet flamed the guy. They were like, you're a hater. He's one of the greatest, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he's about to get traded from Los Angeles. So everybody was like, he was a genius. You were right.
Everybody's saying that, this the most knower of ball person ever. And what a wild take that it was that it ended up working out because, James Harden is trying to work his way out of Los Angeles just the same way that Jaren Jackson is no longer going to be with the Grizzlies, going to Utah. Interesting combination when Walker Kessler comes back.
Yeah.
Could be fun to watch. But no, we're not spending too much time talking about that. We are talking a little bit of college football here to start the show as we have our new college football playoff dates for 2027 and the time period between the conference championship games, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, the national championship, they're going to absolutely blow your mind just to further exemplify how broken the college football calendar year is and how they're trying to extend everything as long as possible to where there is absolutely no offseason, but we don't know what that word is here on the show anyway. We also love to make fun of our way too early projections that start working their way out, whether that's the way too early top 25 rankings, whether that's the too early college football playoff projections. And we're going to talk a little bit about that because some of the explanations on why these teams will be playing in the college football playoff is a little bit comical. And how does that relate to Auburn as Auburn plays two of those teams in back-to-back weeks? We'll discuss that. And then we're going right back into the hardwood. We have a little news on Auburn baseball as well that we want to be able to get out for everybody in hour number one as D1 baseball continues to pump Auburn a whole lot of love as we are 2 weeks until the Psychos take the mound in college baseball.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that, man.
Between starters and closers that are just twitching out on Adderall and energy drinks and everything.
Whatever they're on, yeah.
Yelling at batters, yelling at themselves. I mean, college baseball is almost officially back. We have some news on the Auburn baseball side of things individually, and a lot of the times that you're going to be able to watch this team play if you can't make it to Plainsman Park or you can't travel with the team to go watch them play on the road. We also have some news along the opening ceremonies for the Winter Olympics.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
I love the Winter Olympics.
Over the summer?
Yes. Always have. Always have.
For the reason just of snow in Ohio growing up, or is there
maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I think the events are cooler in the Winter Olympics. We'll talk more at the end of the hour, but I think the events are cooler in the Winter Olympics.
Fair enough. Well, all of that here coming up in hour number one, and then hour number two is all talk of the hardwood. We're recapping the first 9 games for Auburn, what went good, what went bad. Do you like where you're at as an Auburn fan if you're 5-4 right now after 9 games, after the schedule, after the gauntlet that you've already played, and what is to come? And then previewing the second half of the season, the next 9 games, what cannot happen and what needs to happen. All of that coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
And no scheduled guests today, so phone lines are wide open on the program. If you want to be a part of the show with anything on your mind, something we're talking about, maybe it's something we talked about yesterday, something we haven't talked about, and you want to do so, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you at 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. 1390 to call in, or you can hit us up in the On the Line text box, which is always open during the show at 334-784-1067. Again, 334-784-1067. And I know we're talking college football to start today's program, and we're very late on this, and I don't know if we ever truly finished our season picks throughout the rest of the college football playoffs, but have I given you props for winning our college football pick'em since the rankings are still at the top of our show rundown? I don't remember when we stopped. We didn't pick all the way through the national championship officially.
There's an odd number, so that means we took the 4 quarterfinal games before we took that big Christmas break.
So we didn't pick the semis, because I guess we didn't know the semis.
And I don't even know if we took those, though, because we have 6-3.
That would have been the last. It said updated 11:30, so that would have been the last week of the regular season then, right?
I guess. Okay, so yeah, we only did 9 games that final week then. So we,
so
didn't
we
do
probably
anything.
Did rivalry week then. So yes. We just did regular season. So congratulations, sir. Congratulations. You started bad. You started off rough. And slowly made your comeback over the next 2.5 months of the season. You beat me by 3 games, which our records in general are not that bad.
Pretty solid.
You went 99-50 on your college football pick'ems over the regular season this past year. I went 96-53. I mean,
and again, that was every one of those games except for maybe 4 were touchdown or less.
Yeah.
Spreads.
Yeah, all games that had some sort of significance to them. We weren't picking, you know, Delaware and Montana.
Hey, don't you dare hit on
I think that was
Delaware
State, or was it just regular Delaware?
I thought it was.
And what was homie's name? What was it?
Nick Minicucci, baby.
Nick. Our guy, Nick. What a guy. He is so famous on this show, it's not even funny. But yes, I wanted to congratulate you, A, because you deserve it, B, because I want you to delete it off our rundown. I'm tired of looking at it.
Well, we'll say that because of my national champion pick was so bad, it gives you 3 games. And so we're tied, and you just have to wait until next year to wait and see who
over.
The winner is going to be.
It carries into an NBA game tonight. Bulls, Bucks. I'm just kidding.
Winner take all
on a regular season.
Winner take all. Where
season.
Does James Harden go right now?
Yeah. No, I'm okay. So, yes, we are talking college football today. And something that was announced just about an hour or so ago to where we rearranged our whole show schedule for this afternoon. Pete Thamel and a bunch of other people are reporting that the college football playoff has announced dates and locations for the quarterfinals and the semifinals for the next 2 years. It says it includes a near 2-week break between the quarterfinals and the semifinals for the next 2 years. I'm not going to highlight necessarily where these games are being taken place, right? The Fiesta Bowl, the Chick-fil-A Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, right? I don't really care about that. What I do care about is the fact that the college football calendar continues to be broken, Christian. It continues to be all out of whack. Because listen to this. This upcoming season, there will be a 52-day separation between conference championship games that Saturday for the P5. There will be 52 days between that Saturday of conference championship games and the national championship game. Taylor Korn of The Next Round tweeted that out. Said there will be a 52-day gap between when a team does or doesn't compete, I guess, in the conference championship game, and a team does or doesn't compete in the national championship game. Folks, that's 7 weeks. That's nearly 2 months of when you play for a conference title and could play for a national title. You are now stretching the college football season from the end of August to basically the end of January. That's horrible. This is at least the middle of January. This past year was the latest I think it's ever been. This says the semifinals next year are January 14th and 15th. The following year are 13th and 14th. So this doesn't even include the national championship.
No, that's what I was going to say. I'm sure there's still another week of a bye.
Well, let me look. I'll just pull up the 2027 calendar here. That says January 14th and 15th. So, yeah, the national championship game will be Monday, January 25th of 2027. Unless, no way they play the semis and then play the very next Monday. They'd give you a week, right?
If not even.
So it would be Monday, January 25th in 2027. It would then also be
it's the 24th. The 25th in Las Vegas for 27, the 24th in 2028 in New Orleans.
So you go from the end of August through September, October, November, December, and January. The college football season is now 5 months long. Which never in my life did I think I would complain about college football being long, right? College, the season being longer than it was because we love the sport so much. But having a 2 week break between the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and then another week and a half break between the semis and the national championship? What are we doing? That's horrible.
It's almost like they haven't learned that the top four seeds went 1-7 in the first 2 years after getting a first round bye. The only winner was the Indiana Hoosiers that won the national championship. But other than that, you are 0-7. The other seven teams that got first round byes. And the complaint for all of them was, yeah, we went 29-30 days without playing a college football game.
You can't just turn it on. I don't care. You can't. It's not possible. Not that quick, anyway. In a game where everything matters, where your season is on the line, your season is up for grabs right then and there. I understand it's going to take longer because there's more games because of the expanded playoff. And this is just the format if we don't expand the playoffs, right? Which we don't expect them to do anytime soon because they could continue to delay.
At least not the next two, because you get these dates. So you would imagine, obviously not for next year, but you would imagine for 28 they wouldn't agree on it. But yeah, this doesn't include a 16, 18, 24 team playoff where then all of a sudden you have to either cut into the regular season, you get rid of byes all completely, or you just turn it into a 7 month or 7 month long event, which every college football player has already expressed disinterest in.
And I know that this is an unpopular opinion at times. I think you were the one to bring this up, Christian, but I can't remember. I want to give proper credit. You probably weren't the first, but I've heard you talk about it, I think. Look at the calendar for this upcoming season, right? College football starts at the end of August. You go through September, October, November, and then conference championship games are when? That first Saturday of December, right? December 5th of 2026. Then you're not playing college football playoff games until 17th, 18th, 19th. That's 2 weeks of separation. There's a weekend in there that separates those two things. And there's a pretty big game in college football that is highlighted and isolated by itself on that Saturday in between. Saturday, December 12th of 2026 in New York. It's the Army-Navy game. The Army-Navy game, this will be the 127th playing of Army-Navy. But that is the thing separating those two. So there's some options here. A, we get rid of conference championship games, which I still believe will happen at some point. You can then move the Army-Navy game up and put it on conference championship weekend and still give it the weekend and isolation that it deserves. Or you get rid of conference championship games, you move up Army-Navy, and you move everything else up too, and just have it start the day or have it kick off or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, imagine Army-Navy at noon.
Yeah.
That rolls into the 3:30 and then the 7 o'clock college football playoff games.
Yeah, that'd be really
cool.
That
very next week.
Yeah. To where you could shorten the season by 2 weeks. You could at least clean it up.
Just by doing that.
Just by doing that. And I love the Army-Navy game. I do. I love it. They played in Baltimore this past season. They're going to play in New York City this coming season. That's awesome. That's really cool. But I think we're in a time where times are changing, right? They're changing. And things change when that happens. That's a bad way to say it, but it is what it is. Tradition gets bumped. And I hate to be that person, but I think we're teetering on that because of the amount of games we're having to play to crown a national champion.
This was also something that I did not realize until receiving the notification on my phone from Heather Dinich, who wrote an article talking about the college football playoff quarterfinals in 2027. Do you have the date still pulled up?
I do.
What date don't you see?
The quarterfinals?
Mm-hmm.
For the 27-28?
Just 27.
So for the upcoming season.
Correct. I see December 30th.
I don't see New Year's Eve.
You know why? Because there's an NFL Thursday night game.
No way.
College football playoff moves off of New Year's Eve in 2026 to avoid NFL conflict. An article just written by Heather Dinich.
Wow. Wow. You're right. Wednesday, December 30th. Friday, January 1st. Dude, that's...
So instead of what we've talked about of college football walking in and still demanding what they want and what they've done for so long, the NFL little brothered college football, and college football said, okay, fine, we'll find another day. No worries. No worries.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. Sorry for the conflict. Sorry for the
conflict. And college football said, no, there's no conflict. No, we're good. So one game December 30th. And three games on January 1st, which is going to be still a very fun weekend. I don't necessarily complain about it stretching. Now you have one playoff game the 30th, and then you have an NFL game, and then you have the three playoff games. But it's more of the fact of that goes to show you right now that the NFL still and probably always will have the upper hand over the college football playoff. The fact that an NFL, just a Thursday night football game, takes over.
That's crazy, man. I had no idea. I had no idea about that. And yeah, that's crazy. I'm trying to find where that game will be, like what channel or what streaming service.
The NFL game?
Yeah, I bet that's a Netflix game or something.
Either that or weren't all the Thursday games last year on Prime?
Oh, yeah. Well, another streaming service. So, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. If it's a Thursday night game, then, yeah, they'll treat it as such. Wow.
Which is wild because you think if Prime was getting the NFL, you'd think ESPN or whatever would still try and take the others.
And this is not a mutual agreement between the two, because that used to be a thing.
Correct.
And the NFL to pretty much everybody, said, wait a minute. We're the Kings.
Yeah.
We dominate the ratings. We're not going to let the NBA tell us how to roll. We're not going to let college football tell us how to roll.
Yeah, Maction, you can get off Thursday.
The NFL has figured out, because it's so crazy, because we always used to talk, it's like the NFL owns a day of the week, and they do. They own Sundays. They have now realized, doesn't matter. They could play on any given day. They could play Tuesday morning at 10 a.m., and they would still dominate. They started playing Sunday mornings. They've had Monday Night Football and Thursday Night Football for quite some time, right? But even when those were introduced way back when, it was like, wow, there's a Monday night game now? Wow, there's a Thursday night game? Then they started going overseas, right, and playing in London, and I think they're playing in Brazil, and they're playing in Mexico City, and they're playing in all these. I think they're playing in Australia next year, right?
And now the wild card games are on Saturdays.
They're playing on Christmas Day. Now they're playing on New Year's Eve. The NFL does not care, man. And I hate that for college football. But maybe it's a humbling thing for the sport. Maybe it's a humbling thing for ESPN, because the college football playoff and ESPN agreed to not play on New Year's Eve, knowing that their ratings would suffer because of the National Football League. Crazy stuff there, man. Calendar continues to be a problem, continues to be broken in college football. And again, 52 days between the conference championship game and the national championship game coming up for the 2026 college football season. We'll take a break. We'll come back as we are just underway here in hour number one. And don't worry, we're talking playoffs and way too early projections. I'm sure they're accurate, right? We'll talk about those coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break. As we are talking more college football, where we have way too early, and I mean way too early, college football playoff projections.
But you forgot the asterisk of accurate.
Correct. They are 100% right.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing will change. And you should take these and put the house on it. That's what I recommend.
No, he doesn't.
No, I don't at all. Please do not do that.
Don't clip that.
Yeah, don't clip that. Don't clip that. Don't listen to that. Don't even buy into what is about to happen.
Take that as serious as you take Jacob's weather advice.
Yeah, don't use me as your weatherman. That's what I say all the time. So CBS Sports and ESPN and all the other ones have given their playoff projections as they seem to have come. They pretty much come out the night of the national championship game. Yeah. They've got that thing typed up, ready to go, and they send out that notification before the team even lifts the trophy.
Before the transfer portal even opens.
Which is so
dumb. Or, I guess, at this point, until it closes for the final two teams.
Yeah. So, I get it now. I still think it's incredibly dumb to do it this early, but at least in this era of 2026, you at least know what the teams are.
Meaning, starting this year because there's no spring portal.
Correct.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit more validity to it. Not a lot, but a little bit. Because in the past it was, well, I think that, you know, Texas A&M's going to be good. It's like, cool. Well, 30 of their players are going to leave in April. So you want to take that back or not? You at least have that comfort of knowing, okay, this is what Miami is. This is what Indiana is. This is what Alabama is, right? You know what those teams are. CBS Sports puts out their projections where they have Miami as the number one team in the country, the number one seed in the college football playoff. Notre Dame as the two seed because, you know, they're basically sharpied in at this point because they cried about it. Texas as the three, Indiana as the four. Then it gets interesting. Texas Tech is the five.
The first non-automatic bid.
Yes. Georgia the six. Oregon seven. Ohio State at eight. LSU nine. Texas A&M at 10. Memphis at 11 and Michigan at 12. Again, that from CBS Sports. They're way too early. College football playoff prediction.
They are predicting Miami to play either Ohio State or LSU, which would be a really fun game.
LSU, Ohio State would be awesome. Lane Kiffin going up against Ohio State.
You then have Oregon and Texas A&M, where the winner would take on Notre Dame. You have Georgia hosting Memphis, the winner, to play Texas. And Texas Tech and Michigan, the winner, to play Indiana.
So projecting Kyle Whittingham and Michigan to make the playoff year one. Them and Ohio State and Oregon to make it from the Big Ten.
And Indiana
to make it from the Big Ten.
Yeah, they have four projections for the Big Ten. They have four projections for the SEC.
It's pretty good.
And then everybody else.
And then, yeah, one ACC team.
One ACC.
One group of five team with Memphis.
Sorry. G6.
Oh, G6. Sorry. Then
one at large in Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
It's
not bad.
They have Darian Mensa, though, going to Miami and leading the team to the number one overall seed.
Have you looked at the most recent Heisman odds?
Oh, gosh, no.
He's up there.
I don't doubt it.
I think he's a top five. Here, I'm pulling it up, see if I can do it before we got to go to break. Looking at the unnamed betting site, Heisman Trophy winners. Arch Manning in first, C.J. Carr tied with him at first. Josh Hoover at Indiana, Jeremiah Smith, Julian Sayin, Darian Mensa. Darian Mensa, top six betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy right now.
Where's Cam? Just for the sake of conversation.
He is further down than you think. He's not on here. No, he's not on here. Which is kind of surprising. No, I don't see him on here. So,
but his quarterback is.
Yes, his quarterback is the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. So, all right, that's enough college football talk for now. We'll come back and we'll talk a little Auburn baseball. Stick around.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us as we inch closer to the start of college baseball season. And if you think baseball, we just got to February. Yeah, well, you'd be right about that. But Auburn baseball starts in 10 days. February 13th is the first game for Butch Thompson and the Tigers when they open up with opening weekend on the plains as Youngstown State comes to town Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That is next weekend, ladies and gentlemen.
Isn't that your town of your neck of the woods?
Youngstown State, they are in Ohio. I don't exactly remember where they are, if that's the right one. I don't remember exactly where they are. Youngstown, they're in Ohio, in Youngstown, Ohio, but that's not really where I was from, I don't think. Where is that on the map?
Still close enough. You could have said, oh yeah, it was 10 minutes away and we would have believed you.
hold on. Oh yeah, that's on the complete other side of the state, brother. No, that's over
I feel
by,
like we brought this up last time we mentioned.
That's over there by Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's on the Pennsylvania state line. That is northeast Ohio. That's past Canton. That's over there across from Akron. Whew. That's up there near Cleveland.
I can sleep tonight now knowing information.
That's a hike. That's a good 4 hour from where I'm from. So, but Ohio's Ohio, man. We represent. We appreciate them no matter what. But Auburn opens up with Youngstown State next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we've brought this up a couple of times, but we bring it back up today because Auburn continues to get more love from national media outlets about not just the team in general, Christian, but individual players on this team. This Auburn team is going to be really good.
Yeah.
Or they should be really good.
They have every name that you want and are getting a lot of the preseason accolades. And not that this is a shot by any means, and I don't necessarily know how it could be, but don't want it to come out as a shot towards Auburn. But they haven't been the historical baseball programs to where when you see D1 baseball or Perfect Game give out some of the awards, you kind of just look at the logo. It's okay, yeah, sure. This kid's at South Carolina. This kid's at Mississippi State. This kid's at LSU. This kid's at Texas. This kid is at Florida State or Oregon State or whatever the case may be. So when you're seeing this type of love being given to an Auburn team, an Auburn program, which, again, is very deserved, but you know that they're not just handing these awards out based off of a logo, which you feel like goes even a step further to show you them going out of their way to show not only Frelick, who we mentioned a couple weeks ago, being listed as a top five catcher, according to D1 Baseball, but, man, plenty of other big-time names this past weekend that were released.
How about Chris Rembert, according to D1 Baseball, which, again, there are several outlets for college baseball to be the least popular of the big three.
The people that love it, man.
The people that love it are diehard, and there is a lot of coverage of it if you want to go find it.
And if you do, we advise you to listen this or once college baseball gets started.
Oh, yeah, we're diving in deep this year, as we did last year.
I'm bringing Mr. Goins along with us. He's along for the ride.
We're here.
He's fully invested now, baby.
And D1 Baseball being one of those well-known media outlet organizations that covers college baseball phenomenally. They have Chris Rembert, who's returning to Auburn this year. He'll be at the second base bag. D1 Baseball says he is the nation's number one second baseman. Do you understand how hard that is? Do you understand how much of a compliment that is for Chris Rembert? Not only do you bring back his leadership and his bat and his skill, but you now have the hype around him too. So again, Chase Frelick, they said, is a top five catcher in college baseball. Chris Rembert, the number one second baseman in college baseball. And then this one was interesting today with Todd Clay as a top 21st baseman in the country. Now, the first base position is a little wonky because Auburn is trying to replace a first baseman this year. And it hasn't been the smoothest of transitions, but you're trying to replace a pretty darn good first baseman from last year.
You are, and Madrigal, who I believe against St. Mary's, was the first baseman that we were bringing in to take up that first base spot, is dealing with some injuries and is going to come back hopefully in the middle of the season or the start of SEC play. But yeah, right now you're at a little bit of a pick and choose with the first baseman and Todd Clay, again, the name that a lot of people know around here, Auburn High, UAB, is coming in as a third baseman, but that transition is at least a little bit easier going from third to first. And so whether he is your starting first baseman or third baseman, how nice is it to have a couple of different options and to have that type of name in the right-handed batter's box as well?
I'm telling you. So you just start looking around at the guys on this roster, and Auburn's going to be stacked. Again, the number that I came up with is six returning guys in your batting order.
Yeah.
You bring back five or six guys in the pitching rotation, whether it's starters, bullpen, closer. You bring back your closer from last year, and you can't overlook, plus some of the freshmen that we were talking with our buddy Jack Cutton about over the weekend, too, that are making a little noise, especially in that pitching rotation. A couple of local kids from the Smith Station, Phoenix City area that are making noise as well. I mean, it's all baseball.
We know a little bit about those names.
Yeah, we've seen them once or twice. Maybe called their games and watched them shove 90 down Lee Scott and hit tanks and, you know, have a good time.
That was way back when.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, man. Back in my day.
Looking at Chris Rembert, and my goodness, I forgot that he hit .344 this past year.
Man. In the SEC.
10 home runs, 14 doubles, 46 RBIs, but tallied 116 total bases and had an on-base percentage of close to .500.
Pretty darn good.
That'll get the job done as your leadoff hitter. And again, this was somebody that couldn't even play in the postseason. Was it him or was it Guevara?
Guevara.
Was it Guevara that got in the right-handed batter's box? And
he was struggling big time because he was injured. I mean, and Auburn was having to bounce around several guys. The Auburn team was healthy for the most part. And then Guevara was struggling with injuries down the stretch because you were trying to play him in the field. You were, correct me if I'm wrong, Wasn't Auburn DHing him a little bit?
They were, yeah. I'm trying to make sure. It was Guevara that pinch hit for Fabian and couldn't even get out of the right-handed batter's box.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But you bring back so many of those guys, and on top of your coaching staff staying together and just having all the hype in the world, we've talked about that schedule a little bit, too, for Auburn baseball. It's not anything crazy. Your non-conference schedule is exciting, right? Again, you open up next weekend with Youngstown State. You'll have Cincinnati coming in with the Bearcats. You'll take that trip to Arlington again and take on some big logos over there. Nebraska comes in for a non-conference series to start the end of February and beginning of March. You have a couple more non-conference games, and then boom, middle March, you're in SEC play.
You are. And Auburn has also taken notes of the SEC announcing the national TV schedule for Auburn baseball, and quite a few games, and you have a couple full series on here, which is really, really exciting. It starts on Saturday, March 28th, where you go to Alabama. I believe that's the game three. That's an SEC network. That's a 7 p.m. game. I guess, yeah, that wouldn't be the Sunday afternoon. But then you have your Saturday and Sunday games in early April against Kentucky on SEC network. You have your Thursday, Friday, Saturday, your entire series at Florida is on TV, the first two games on SEC Network. You also have one on ESPN2. You have the Friday game at Texas A&M on SEC Network. And then the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the full series at Mississippi State, 7 p.m., 7:30, and 3 p.m., ESPNU, SEC Network, and SEC Network. And so I would imagine that number will hopefully increase a little bit, because based off of what we're looking at right now, I didn't really notice it until reading these names off, but of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games that are at least listed nationally, only two games are shown in Plainsman Park.
Yeah, and so it just goes to show that Auburn is not only getting the hype from the media, but the television networks want you on their network too. And of course, we'll have all the radio broadcasts with our conjunction with the Auburn Sports Network over on Wings 94.3. That is the home once again of Auburn baseball for this upcoming season. We will have a couple of those games here on ESPN during crossover season with basketball and baseball, since they will be kind of going on at the same time, including, I believe, next weekend. More information on that to come. But just got a text in the on-the-line text box, which is open, by the way, 334-784-1067. Also, the phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. And someone says, is it a disappointment if Auburn doesn't host a Super Regional this year? Of course, they hosted Regionals last year, hosted the Super against Coastal Carolina last year. Question is it a disappointment if Auburn baseball does not host a Super Regional?
Oh, man.
I have my answer.
Going to a Super Regional, I would say yes. Hosting, there's so much that goes on that's up in the air. I will say maybe not as much hosting, but going, I would say it's a little bit of a little bit of a disappointment if everything goes the way. And again, there's so many asterisks with baseball of health and pitching, but the way everything stacks up, not as much. It'd still be a little bit upset if you don't get to host a Super, but if you don't go, yes.
That's exactly my answer. It's really hard to host. Everything has to fall in place. Things have to go right for you that are outside of your control. And there's a reason Auburn hosted its first ever Super Regional last year. It's hard to do. So I'll say it's not a disappointment if you don't host, but exactly what you just said, Christian, if you don't get to the Supers, given the hype, and maybe that's not a fair expectation, because that in itself is extremely hard to do, right? You have to go 500 in SEC play, if not win a game or two above that, which doesn't sound all that crazy, but SEC baseball is a whole different game. It's a different brand, right? It's a different beast. then you have to be competitive in the SEC tournament in Hoover. Then you got to win a regional. Even if you host it, you got to take down three teams along the way. And then, as I mentioned, and you did too, things have to go right outside of your control for you to host a Super. You got to be that top eight seed. You've got to be literally one of the best teams in college baseball from start to finish. And so hosting a Super, I don't think would be disappointing if it doesn't happen, but yeah.
I think that's a conversation that can be had outside the locker room. Inside the locker room, you're dang right it's a disappointment if you don't host.
Yeah, I think so. That's fair. I think so. And I don't think it's fair also to say Omaha or bust, right? Because that's hard. And maybe it is fair. I don't know. We talk about that in other sports.
Yeah.
Maybe not for Auburn right now, but other sports, college football, it's become playoff or bust. College basketball, on a larger scale, of course, it's tournament or bust.
Especially with this baseball team having the most excitement of the big three.
So maybe it is Omaha or bust. I don't know if Butch Thompson would tell you that. I don't know if Tiefert or Carl would tell you that. I don't know if the players would tell you that. But I think the diehard fans of Auburn baseball would tell you that, secretly, right?
And even every player and coach deep down thinks that way, but you feel like it's not necessarily appropriate for half of those teams to come out and say that.
Yeah, and I think, too, logistically, before we get to break, I think getting to Omaha is the hardest of the big three.
Yeah.
I think it's the hardest one to get to. Omaha, the NCAA basketball tournament, or the college football playoff. I think it's the hard in the era that we're in of all three sports, I think Omaha's still the hardest one to get to.
It's basically, I mean, you have to play from a winner's bracket on, otherwise you're having to dig yourself up basically in an elimination game against, if that's game one, if that's game two, if that's game three, and the different strategies that you have to use to get there.
Yeah. With a lot of moving parts and moving pieces. So college baseball starts next weekend. Auburn gets things started at Plainsman Park. They will host Youngstown State Friday, February 13th. We are still awaiting first pitch times for all three of those games next weekend. We will take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrap it up, hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes here before we get into hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And just a couple of minutes, and wanted to highlight this very quickly. Coming up on Friday, this Friday on February 6th, the opening ceremony for the 2026 Winter Olympics will take place on Friday evening. Now, the Olympics actually start tomorrow. There are a couple of events that get going a few days early, but the opening ceremony for the Winter Olympics are coming up on Friday night. They are in Italy this year, and I don't know how you feel, Christian. I love the Winter Olympics. I love them. They are my favorite.
I enjoy it, but I guess it's not necessarily I need to mark times of the events.
Growing up, I used to, funny enough, my grandparents, who are not sports people by any means, they were the sports people that watched sports if I was in it or watched it if I was watching it. But it's one of the things that my grandmother that came to visit this fall, her and my grandfather who has passed away, but that was one of the things that we always sat and watched together was the Winter Olympics. He loved it. He loved watching the Winter Olympics, and I'd go stay for several days, and, you know, you'd sit down at night, and it was always on, and, you know, over the years. And I love it. I love the Winter Olympics so much. I love bobsledding. I love snowboarding. I love skiing. I love all the different versions of those. I like the ice skating. I like the hockey,
tomorrow
of course.
Tomorrow at noon, baby.
Hmm.
Curling.
I do love curling. Curling is so... I'm being serious. If you've never watched curling, you need to. Curling is electric. Isn't it, Brandon? Yeah, curling is electric. Brandon, our new hire, sitting here training today, he agrees that curling is awesome, right? You have alpine skiing, figure skating, hockey is awesome, speed skating, though that sport is wild.
And pardon ignorance for not knowing this, go down the giant hill and then you just fly.
Believe that's alpine.
Is that what?
I think that's alpine. Because there's several different versions of it. That's the one where you just go shooting down the big,
you lean
the
forward
massive
and you have
hill.
To tuck your legs a little. Yes. Wild.
Someone says in our text box, I'm way more of a curling fan than a guy from Alabama should be.
Yeah, it's
kind of where we are. Yeah,
because it has no reason being as awesome as it is.
Yeah, you've got alpine curling. Someone said, "Oh yeah, skeleton." That's another good one. That's a fun one. My favorite Winter Olympic sport. Somebody asks. It's so basic. I'm not picking hockey because hockey happens all the time. I love Olympic hockey. I do, but I can't lie, dude. Bobsledding. Is pretty awesome. Bobsled is pretty incredible.
Give me the half pipe.
Half pipe is sweet. I mean, I think about all the Sean White days.
Yeah,
and do you see Lindsey Vonn said she's good to go today?
I'm talking about Mountain Dew.
Lindsey Vonn says she's good to go. She got injured really bad. A huge crash going down in one of the pre-race stuff. And she said she's okay. She said she's good to go. So we shall see. I'll say a luge is fun, too, but I'll say bobsledding. That's the one. I'll pick that one. So, I don't know. Just wanted to throw that out there. Winter Olympics technically start tomorrow. Opening ceremony coming up on Friday. Okay, hour number one in the book. Stick around. We're talking all things college basketball coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this sunny Tuesday afternoon. And if you missed any of the first hour of today's show, be sure to go back and listen to the podcast version. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com or on the Radio Alabama app in the podcast center. And it was a busy hour number one, where we hit on some college football talk, where the calendar somehow got worse for college football, for the sport that we love, which is pretty impressive to say that, to say the least. But talked about that, the changes to the college football playoff calendar, college football playoff dates, and the amount of time from the end of the regular season to the start or to the end of the postseason. So pretty crazy stuff there. Plus, we talk some Auburn baseball as the Tigers continue to get preseason love as D1 baseball and other outlets are ranking their players by position. Auburn has the nation's best second baseman. That's right. We talked about that in the first hour. Plus, the Winter Olympics get started this week, and we had a bunch of good responses on people's favorite Winter Olympic sports, whether they like the Winter Olympics versus the Summer Olympics and things. points. And so all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out again in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're flipping over to the hardwood. We get to recap Auburn's first nine games in SEC play. What went good? What went bad? What could have gone a lot better? We're going to talk a lot about that. We're also going to pause in the middle and talk about where we are here in the standings, right in the middle of the SEC. Where are you at? Where could you be? But all things considered, are you happy where you're at? We're also going to take a little look at the SEC standings as a whole, some of the teams that are very impressive, some of the teams that have underperformed so far as everybody hits the back half of their schedule here coming up this weekend. And then we will flip towards the second half of the Auburn basketball season, their final nine games. What cannot happen? What needs to happen? And what happens if you take care of business? What does that look like as you make your way into late February, into early and middle of March, where you're going to play some postseason basketball? And if all things go the way that you hope they do, you're going to be playing late into March and maybe into April in there as well. All of that coming up here in hour number two, and no scheduled guests on this Tuesday afternoon, which means you can be a unscheduled guest if you would like to do so.
Correct.
At 334-321-1390 is the number on the phone lines if you would like to get connected to us, get your thoughts out on anything that we've talked about so far today or anything that we haven't talked a little bit about. I know there's some other Auburn football news after getting done with Junior Day, a couple of crystal balls that Auburn has gotten, which is exciting. Haven't really mentioned those names quite yet, and how unfortunate is it that that's the world that we live in college football now of, man, a junior, a quarterback, the number three rated quarterback was crystal balled to Auburn, yet 3 years ago, that's what you lead the show with, and now we just kind of mention that to the wayside because of whatever that means nowadays until they get on the planes and sign their pen and paper and then wait even longer. That's when you can finally get excited about it. But if that's something you would like to talk about, any thoughts, any comments on that, again, phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. Text box is always open. We've had a lot of interactions so far here on the show today at 334-784-1067. We got texts about speed skating. We got figure skating in there as well.
Dude, people love – I'm surprised there's as many people that like the Winter Olympics being from the South. And I just, again, not having the winter-ish sports around here.
I was going to say, it's because it's so foreign.
I mean,
to where it's just awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic, dude. The Winter Olympics is where it's at, I'm telling you. If you've never watched it, tune in. It's like 3 weeks long. Tune in. They're in Italy. It's awesome. You'll be happy that you did. That's all I'm saying.
But again, all of that's coming up here in hour number two. And we start talking Auburn basketball and the first nine games of the SEC schedule. As we know, Auburn 14-8 overall. They are 5-4 in the Southeastern Conference. And again, we just have our bullet points in both segments that we're going to want to dive into. And so we'll start with the good side. What went good for Auburn in that nine-game stretch? You might have gotten my bullet point. The four-game win streak is where everything highlights. But maybe if you're not looking at overall records, Jacob, what went good for you in that nine-game start for the Auburn Tigers?
I think it's the growth that they made. I think it's the changes that they made. We saw this team get better over that stretch. And I know that sounds so routine and elementary, but I think it's true. I think it
got you this time.
Wasn't me. I don't know what you're talking about. Way to go, Brandon. I think it's the idea that Auburn got better as a basketball team, which is what you want to see from a competitor. It's what you want to see from a team who's trying to compete in the league, who's trying to compete in the NCAA tournament. Auburn got better. And I understand that their nine-game record so far in SEC play is 5-4. And that doesn't sound like a team that got better. That doesn't sound like a team that's on a roll. But given that you started 1-3 in SEC play, and then you turned it around and have won four of your last five, Auburn got better. That's what worked. They realize what they're good at. They realize what they're not. Do they always play to those things? No, but they at least know that it's in there. And a lot of that, including the Tennessee game on Saturday, is because of your opponent, which is understandable.
Sure.
But that's what I take away from the 9-game slate so far, is Auburn started out rough. And you got hot against Arkansas. You beat Arkansas, but you didn't beat Arkansas. You outshot Arkansas. You outscored Arkansas. You beat Ole Miss. You beat Florida. You beat Texas and had every chance to beat Tennessee. That's what I take away.
Yeah, and I think that Florida win is obviously the biggest win so far for this Auburn team, especially, again, in SEC play, where you're 5-4 at the halfway point. And how nice is it, too, that Auburn, I mean, you feel like there's complaints sometimes. You feel like sometimes it comes too early, comes too late. This time, you are smack dab in the middle of your SEC gauntlet is when you get that bye, and you get it between Tennessee and Alabama. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. But, yeah, the Florida win and the Texas win, you kind of combine those, and that is what is really, really impressive for me, because mm-hmm. you saw this team go and win two games in two very different ways, right? Florida, you win 76-67, where you shoot 5 of 15 from behind the three-point line and more.
That's so
funny. I don't even know if the microphone picks it up, but we almost have a running tally of whenever we go to any website, whose computer plays
whose computer audio is on.
Yeah, and I made fun of Jacob about 2 minutes ago, and then I clicked on the box score of Auburn and Florida, and ESPN got me with a Wayfair commercial.
Wow. No free whoa. No free pump.
That was a complaint. No, that wasn't publicity. That was straight complaint. Don't use it because of this. No.
Yeah.
But Auburn goes 5 of 15 from behind the three-point line. Only shoot 21 free throws in that contest as well, which many people forget about, where you didn't necessarily go and shoot 30, 35 free throws, but you were 19 of 21 on the road. You had 8 assists, which is still a number that you would like to see a little bit more, but you feel like that's almost the number that you expect now from this Auburn team, 8 to 13, just because of the not necessarily ISO ball, but all but ISO ball, especially with mismatches that Auburn loves to take advantage of, and a lot of that is through Keyshawn Hall, who at Florida didn't necessarily have the best game, was 8 of 17, but man, when you found so many different ways to win at Florida, especially on what you saw Florida do on their home floor against Alabama, you then respond the very next game in a game that Stephen Pearl audibly talked about multiple times in the post-game press conference that he was very scared of. And yeah. It was a Texas team who was 3-4 at the time in SEC play, but plays so much better than 3-4 in SEC play. And you saw that with the talent that they had with Daylon Swain, with Cameron Heidi, who played 38 minutes actually, but somebody that you don't expect 15 or 17 points from any given night. It was a Texas team that shot 52%. Auburn was able to match them, though, and shoot 51%. And then you saw the three-point line be a friend at home inside Neville Arena. So those two games are the ones that really, really stand out for me, that Auburn didn't allow that emotional hangover of a really big win on the road at Florida. You were able to go back to your own gym and pick up a really nice win. That was what went really good. That being said, there were also a couple things that you don't necessarily throw all of this into the category of the bad, right? You don't necessarily have the good, the bad, the ugly, but there were a couple of things that didn't go Auburn's way that weren't necessarily because of what other teams did.
And funny enough, it isn't just the losses on the schedule.
No.
I mean, the South Carolina win was not good. The Ole Miss win, even though it was by 12, yeah, the first half of the Ole Miss game was not good. Auburn had to scrape by South Carolina at home, by the way, inside of Neville Arena. And the game against Georgia was tough. The game against A&M, right, you felt like you lost it, then you won it, and then they took it from you again.
Which we continue to we've moved on from, but then you go back and you realize that Auburn was up, what, 16, 18 points with 12 minutes to play?
Oh, I mean, you had it taken care of. I mean, you had people leaving the building because they thought it was over. And Texas A&M didn't give up. They didn't give in. And they come back and win the basketball game, right? The Tennessee game was not good because you couldn't you get down big early and you can't come back from it. You come back a little bit here and there. You chip away, give it back. Chip away, give it back, right? But why do those things happen? That's the bad for me is, and it's something we've talked about, they've all been different. Auburn at times plays pitiful, poor defense. Auburn at times plays great defense. Auburn at times shoots the ball very well. Auburn at times doesn't shoot the ball well, but they shoot it anyway, right? There are different things. Auburn, for the most part, has taken care of the basketball. I think that's something you can highlight. But Auburn at times is the bully down low, and sometimes Auburn gets bullied down low. Tennessee was an example of that, where you got bullied. The Florida game was where you bullied them.
But then you go back to Missouri, and you go back to even Georgia a little bit.
That Missouri game was bad, man. That you talk about an outlier. You talk about, right, when you're taking the mean, the average of numbers back in grade school, right? And they're like, okay, we have these massive set of numbers, right? But there's a couple of numbers that don't really belong. They're kind of out there by themselves. You take the outliers out, and then you take the average. This game needs to be taken out for Auburn.
That Missouri team shot 56% from the field. They were 9 of 19 from deep with Trent Pierce coming off the bench, having 18 points on 5 of 7 from deep. Tahad Pettiford was 3 of 12. Keyshawn Hall was 2 of 9. They combined for 19 points. That was when we really started having the conversations of, okay, it's Tahad Pettiford and Keyshawn Hall. You throw those into your left hand, and then it's the other 7 players in your right hand, and you hope that those numbers somewhat equal out. And you had Sebastian, you had Keyshawn Murphy, you had KO, you had Phillip, you had Elijah Freeman that all did more than what they were supposed to do in that game, but you couldn't really get anything going from your starters that shot, again, a combined 5 of 21 in that contest and 0 of 8 from the three-point line. So, yeah, definitely the one outlier you would imagine so far in SEC play.
That Missouri team is just not all that. They were 3-1 after that game in SEC play. They're still... Auburn and Missouri have the same record in the SEC. They're both 5-4, which may not make Auburn fans feel all that good. That's also a Missouri team that beat Florida in the SEC opener.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Florida in the SEC opener. Also beat Kentucky on the road, beat Auburn, lost to LSU, lost to Georgia, lost to Bama. Two of their wins are against Oklahoma and Mississippi State, two of the worst teams in the league, but... Man, you can't take away a win over Florida, Auburn, Kentucky. You can't take those wins away from them.
As bad of a loss as it was, when you look at how whack this SEC schedule is and how whack the SEC is just as a whole, it doesn't go this way from the Auburn perspective, but it doesn't go down as a terrible loss.
No, I'm looking at where Missouri is right now. In the net rankings, Missouri, oh goodness, where are they? 69 in the net is where Missouri is.
They're 58th in KenPom.
So technically,
it was a quad one game, right?
Remind me, quad games.
Isn't
I know.
It, isn't it 30, 50, 70?
It's 1 through 30, 1 through 50, 1 through 75. 1 through 30 at home, 1 through 50 on neutral site, 1 through 75 on the road. But I don't remember in the quad system if that carries and changes throughout the year. It does?
Yes,
okay.
Because I remember last year Auburn actually had a couple of games taken out of their quad one.
Okay.
Because of what like the SEC tournament did, which made it to where they only like tied Houston for the most quad one wins ever, rather than having one, if not two more.
Okay.
Wins.
So my reason for asking that and getting clarification is that is a quad one loss for Auburn. So, again, I hate the idea of a good loss, but because of how the tournament committee operates, because of how they decide the teams that do and don't get in, because of how they decide the seed lines and where you go and who you play, the NCAA tournament committee, they just salivate over quad one records. But here's what's crazy. They don't care what your record is. They don't care if you've lost almost all of your quad one games. What they want is for you to just play quad one games. You can be 1-15, but the fact that you had played 16, you're making the tournament.
But you look at what Auburn is right now. Auburn's net rating is second. Behind Alabama.
You're 4-7 in quad one games, which I know people hear that and it's like, so we have a losing record against good teams. Yeah, you do. You do have a losing record against good teams because you, Auburn, could not find a way, right? In a lot of those in non-con play, you lost to Houston. You lost to Michigan. You lost to Arizona. You lost to Purdue. There's four of them right there. There's four of your seven losses against good teams. Georgia goes down as a quad one game. You, what's your other one? That's five. Tennessee was six. A&M was seven. Texas A&M on your home floor goes down as a quad one loss. At least for now. They're 35th in the net, though. Texas A&M is. So I wonder what that other game could be. I don't know.
Here, we can pull it up. Auburn's quad wins right now. Yeah, 4-7. Texas A&M right now is a quad two loss.
So that is your quad two loss. Yeah, because you're 2-1.
Tell
What's
me,
the other quad one?
Running through these, I don't remember all the ones. You mentioned Houston, Michigan. Yeah. Did you mention St. John's?
Oh, I did not.
St. John's, NC State is now listed a quad one game too.
Oh my God, they are. Yeah, because they're 26th.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then Arizona, Purdue, Georgia, the loss to Arkansas, the win to, or the win over Arkansas, the loss over Missouri.
Wow.
And then Florida and Tennessee. So Auburn 4-7 in quad one. You're 2-1 in quad two with wins over Ole Miss and Texas. Texas losing a couple games has hurt a little bit. But then Texas A&M is somehow still a quad two game. And then you're 8-0 against quad three and quad four, which
you have to
in comparison to quad one, you cannot have losses in quad three and quad four. And South Carolina is a quad three win right now, which is
gross.
Wild to think about. And then Oregon's the other quad three win, which we gave a lot of credit for that win early in the season, and maybe not as much so right now.
St. John's on a seven-game win streak, by the way.
You look at it right now, what's left before we hit the break and talk about where Auburn is at, I guess kind of continuing this conversation. You have three straight quad one games. You go to quad two, right back to quad one, quad two, and then quad three, quad two, quad one. Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas, you have three straight quad one games coming up. And then you have Mississippi State before Kentucky, who is still 28th in the net. So
that's wild.
That's a quad one win. But then again, we mentioned it after that. After this three-game stretch, which we'll talk about again on the other side of this break, you have 94th-ranked Mississippi State, 28th-ranked Kentucky at home, but then you go 82nd, 79th, 57th before Alabama.
You got to win those.
Final six games, man, we've talked about. You survive the middle six, you got to go out and win those final six games, and then Alabama on the road, which will be a very, very fun game. And Alabama comes to town in Neville Arena. We'll talk a little bit about that game, and we'll talk about what the SEC standings look like as a whole. Maybe take a look at some of the games coming up this week, tonight and tomorrow night, as we are halfway through the SEC schedule, and we're almost halfway through hour number two. Stick with us. We continue our basketball conversation right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break, and we are, I mean, we're knees deep into a basketball conversation right now.
We're
deep in this.
And it's not going anywhere either.
No.
After this, we're talking about the next half of
which
the
we kind of just
season.
Previewed a hair, kind of alluded
we
to
did.
It a little bit, but diving a little bit deeper into that because Auburn basketball is on the bye week this week, right? No midweek games, so they don't play tonight. They don't play tomorrow. Good games tonight and tomorrow, by the way, which we can kind of dive into that a little bit in the next segment too. But Auburn has hit the halfway point. Everybody else will catch up with them tonight and this week. But You have your one bye week this week before you prepare for Alabama. And I know that 5-4 is disappointing, I guess, right? Disappointing for what Auburn was projected to do. Probably not what Auburn fans want after the halfway point. But given how you got here, that's kind of what I talked about and what I think went good for Auburn was, or went well, I guess, for Auburn, is how you started and how you finished this first half of the SEC schedule gives me confidence heading into this weekend.
Yeah, it should. Again, based off of what is upcoming in the final nine. But yes, when you look at the overall record, if I were to tell you come January, hey, we can fast forward a little over a month and you can be 5-4. Would you take that right now? I don't know how many people would say yes, but then if I showed you the overall SEC standings and Auburn wasn't in there, I think it would draw a couple people back and you might take it because it shows you how good the league is, but how there's not that, again, I keep using the word tier system. There's not that tier one of two or three teams, and maybe they're slowly starting to be, but there's not three or four teams that are just so much better than everybody else. And if I were to tell you, yes, you're 5-4, but you're on a four, or you've won four out of your last five games with South Carolina, at Ole Miss, you win at Florida, you win versus Texas, and you lose at Tennessee, I think that would surprise a couple of people, mm-hmm. and I think that might take back a couple of answers.
But if you also side-noted that and left out the record altogether and you said, hey, halfway through the SEC schedule, I can't tell you any of the other results, but you beat a top 15 Arkansas team at home and you go on the road and beat a top 20 Florida team.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, give me that. I'll take my chances.
Or if you couldn't see your record, but I showed you that Auburn was 7th or 8th, smack dab in the middle of the SEC. I didn't show you any other team, but I said, this is where Auburn's at. Would you take it?
Probably.
I thought there'd be more people that said yes.
Yeah, probably so. Well, that was the first half of the SEC schedule. Let's talk the second half of the SEC schedule. We'll do that right after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. Again, phone lines are open today. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, you absolutely can. Be sure you do so. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And before we dive back into college basketball, we have kind of recapped the first half of Auburn's SEC schedule, and we want to kind of dive into the back half of Auburn's SEC schedule and talk about expectations, what Auburn should do, what Auburn could do, maybe what they need to do, right? Updated bracketology, believe we got that today as well, so we can kind of loop all that in together. But earlier in the show, actually to start today's show, we talked about the announcement from the College Football Playoff Committee on the new dates for the College Football Playoff quarterfinals, the College Football Playoff semifinals, and just how absurd they actually are. And the idea that there will be over 2 weeks from the conference championship games and the quarterfinals, there will then be 2 weeks between the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and from the weekend of conference championship games to the national championship game, there will be 52 days of separation, which is 7 weeks long.
Just like we wanted, right?
Just like everybody wanted, right? The calendar was so broken, they said, ha, watch this. Josh Pate, who is a very popular, well-known voice of college football, he put out a post a little bit ago and said, you want to know how insane the college football calendar is for 2026 in regard to what was released today? He did the math, and I'm sure he's correct if he's putting it online, because everything on the internet's true. Most things he puts on the internet are true. He says that Saturday, November 14th, week 11 of the college football season, Saturday, November 14th, marks the mathematical halfway point between week one and the college football national championship. Think about that again. Let me say it one more time. Saturday, November 14th. Think about that day in your head, where that falls on the calendar. Saturday, November 14th, week 11 of the college football season, is the mathematical halfway point between week one and the national championship game.
Because there's basically a bye week. Following that week 11th, after week 12, there's basically a bye week in between every single game.
If not two.
Because there's a bye week before the conference games. There's not one there. But then there's one because of Army-Navy into the first round.
Then there's two
weeks. There's two to where, again, if you make it past the first round, if you're the 1-4 seed, there's time. You don't play games for 28, 29, 30 days, which, again, goes back to the conversation we had in hour number one of why teams that got the first round bye are a combined 1-7 in the 2 years of having first round byes, because – like you said, you can't just turn that on. You can't just all of a sudden, and again, as good as teams are and as good as you can replicate games with practice, there still is no true comparison. And you can't just turn it on. And now even more teams are going to have to deal with having one, if not 2 weeks before playing games, and then that works its way into the quarters, into the semis, and then into the national championship.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share that in case you had not seen that yet, or the idea that the college football calendar has taken an extra step to being just absurd. But back to college basketball, where we're talking Auburn, right? On the bye this week, no midweek game. They won't play tonight or tomorrow. They will play their next game this Saturday afternoon inside of Neville Arena for round one of the Iron Bowl of basketball. Auburn 5-4 in SEC play, halfway through with 9 games to go. Their schedule is as such. Alabama at home this Saturday. Vanderbilt at home in the midweek next week. At Arkansas next Saturday night. At Mississippi State in the midweek. Home versus Kentucky the following Saturday night. At Oklahoma in the midweek. Home versus Ole Miss that Saturday. Home versus LSU in the midweek, and then at Alabama to end the regular season on Saturday night, March 7th. That is the remaining schedule. As it stands right now, Christian, as of this week's AP poll, of the 9 remaining games that Auburn has in SEC play, only 2 are top 25 games. You say, wait, that's not true, right? That can't be the case. Oh, yes, it is. Alabama's not ranked. Kentucky is not ranked. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU are not ranked.
Which you take halfway seriously because of the rankings. That being said, the quad system you feel like takes a little bit of precedence. Those games, of your final 9 games, 5 of them are quad one.
Which I would take that and run with it further than I would top 25
correct
AP poll.
Yeah, which is the point that I was correct diving into. But we get to the conversation of, in the first segment, talking about the first 9 games, we had the what went good, what went bad. Previewing now these next 9 games, we have what cannot happen and what needs to happen. And the only thing that I have right now that cannot happen is a 4-game losing streak. With Tennessee going back to game number 9, Alabama, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, a 4-game losing streak cannot happen.
Yeah, that would really be tough, to where you come into the back half 5-4, you come out of that stretch that make you, what, 5-7? Oh, you were 5-3 heading into the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
And you come out of that 5-7, because even if, right, let's say you rip off wins against Mississippi State So you're 6-7. Let's say you beat Kentucky, you're 7-7. Oklahoma on the road, 8-7. Ole Miss, LSU at home, you're now 10-7 with a game and a trip to Tuscaloosa, 10-7 in SEC play, which isn't a terrible record.
Which, no, because, I mean, if we told you you were 10-8 at the end of the SEC season, I think you would take it.
So can Auburn afford a four-game losing streak?
So I have... I guess there is a little bit of a sub-asterisk. You cannot lose four. That needs to be the one main cannot happen bullet points. Because then if you do, what immediately goes into what needs to happen is you can't lose again. Or you can't lose again before you go to Tuscaloosa on March 7th. You would then need to rattle off what you mentioned, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, LSU, which... should be the expectation, but I'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But in my opinion, the four-game losing streak, I guess the three games now, if you're looking at the back nine games, that cannot happen. So what needs to happen is you survive these next four games. You then...
Next three at this point.
Correct. Yeah, sorry. Your next three games, you then go 4-1. In those next five games,
yeah,
before Alabama.
Yeah. I'll say this, and it's a point that I make quite often in sports, right? Losing to good teams and beating bad teams doesn't make it equal.
Say that again.
Losing to good teams and then following it up by beating bad teams doesn't equal out.
Oh,
doesn't
yeah, no.
Wash everything away. Doesn't make it all okay.
Right. Which is what you're seeing almost, all due respect to why Texas A&M still isn't getting a lot of love.
Right.
Because of what they've played in their first half of the SEC.
And what I mean by that is, let's say Auburn goes on that doomsday four-game losing streak of Tennessee, Alabama, Vanderbilt, Arkansas. I'm not going to just... I will be upset and I will be very concerned with this team because that tells me, okay, we're in the heart of the season and you're not competing with good teams. You're not beating good teams. That's concerning for what you're trying to do in postseason play. I'm not going to say, oh, everything's okay because you beat Mississippi State, Oklahoma, and Ole Miss and LSU. Those two things are not created equal.
Right. If you go on a four-game losing streak and then a four-game winning streak of Mississippi State, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, you don't wash those out.
Correct.
At least record-wise, I guess it does, because you're still then working with a lot of confidence. But
you look at net ranking, KitPom, things like that, that will reflect correct. What I'm saying.
But it's a lot of what we talked about inside Jordan Hare, right?
Yeah.
The middle games this past year.
Not all wins are created equal.
Of Oklahoma, A&M, Georgia, Missouri, that four-game stretch. And then all of a sudden, the back half of those games of Arkansas, Kentucky, of how those types of wins are not going to overstep all of those losses. I think that's kind of the point we're getting to here at these first couple of games in the back half of your SEC schedule, which is, again, home for Alabama, home for Vanderbilt at Arkansas. And if you went on that four-game losing streak, that's two at home that you lose to Alabama and Vanderbilt, which does not help because... if you can't win inside Neville Arena, where that's been your one saving grace, that does not necessarily help you. But what needs to happen, again, you survive those four, those now three games, and then if you can go 4-1, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, LSU, then that five-game stretch.
Which is not anything crazy.
No, and that is a one loss of a really bad night and one team gets hot. Saying that's like it is, all of a sudden, you then went 5-4. If you can survive these and you go 2-2 in these four games with Tennessee, Bama, Vandy, Arkansas, and then you go 4-1, that puts you at 11-7 going into Alabama and Tuscaloosa. Much less,
yeah.
You go 3-1 in this stretch with wins over Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas.
I think that's a tall ask
I
with
do.
This current team at the moment.
Correct. But saying either that or you don't get that one caveat of that loss after that and you're able to win all five of those games, then you're You're sitting at a really good spot.
That's the best of both worlds, though. That's a dream scenario, I would think. I think a realistic expectation, and I'm taking the Tennessee game out of this, at least for the sake of conversation. I understand if you lose the next three in a row, you're technically on a four-game losing streak.
Sure, but just putting yourself present right now.
Right, in the back half of the schedule. I think winning one of the next three is okay. In terms of your record, winning one of the next three of Alabama, Vanderbilt, Arkansas is good enough.
And a necessity, in my opinion.
Oh, I 100% agree. I think for me, the eye test and feeling confident about this team, winning two of the next three is important. If you want to stay competitive, if you want to stay at the front, if you want to show at least me, Jacob Goins, that this team is ready to compete and make a run in March, winning two of your next three is crucial for doing that. Then the rest of those games, you're going to be favored in all of them except the Alabama game. You'll be favored in Starkville. You'll be favored at home against Kentucky, in Norman, at home against Ole Miss, and at home against LSU. That's five games in a row. You will be favored to win and the better team on the floor. You have to win those games. Auburn has not done that every time this year. Do we think that Missouri's a better basketball team than Auburn? I don't. Do you think Tennessee at their peak is a better basketball team than Auburn? Maybe, or maybe not. That's an argument, right? Is Georgia at their best a better basketball team than Auburn? I don't think they are. I really don't. Your non-conference losses, yeah, you didn't belong on the same floor as Purdue, Arizona, Michigan, and Houston. Not at that time. But Auburn, that's what good teams do. That's what great teams do. That's what competitive teams do, is beat the teams they're supposed to. So that's what I'm looking for. If you just want to check a box and be okay, win one of your next three. But if you want to prove to be a competitor in March, winning two of your next three is crucial, in my opinion.
I think if you only win one of the next three, which puts you either 1-4 in your last four, or if you lose all four, you cannot afford to lose any of those games, those next five games before going to Alabama. But if things go the way that you're talking about, you're 1-2, and then you go on a five-game stretch, you're 11-6 going to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. And again, record-wise, that would check the box.
Very much so.
But you know me, I speak from a different perspective of the eye test and the feeling and the resume rather than, man, got another win, beat LSU at home, baby. You see what I'm saying? That's the side that I'm speaking from here. That's the perspective I'm bringing, is if you go 1-3 against Tennessee, Alabama, Vandy, Arkansas, I'm really concerned.
Yeah, because then again, you don't get the bonus points of a four or five game win streak or a loss in between there.
Correct.
Much less you fall to Mississippi State or you fall to Kentucky at home or Oklahoma on the road. That's when things really begin to pile on. Want to ask a question here on the way out before we head to break. And anybody that wants to answer this, please go ahead, because we want y'all's opinions as well at 334-784-1067. I'll ask this to you on the text box again, 334-784-1067. I'll ask this to you, and you'll answer it on the other side of this break.
Okay.
Of the next three games, which is, again, home for Alabama, home for Vanderbilt, and at Arkansas. 2-1, where you don't pick your wins, or 1-2, but you pick your win?
Okay.
And why is the answer possibly not even picking your win over Alabama, because it's the least of the impressive ones?
Yeah, at least in terms of the AP poll, I'd have to double-check on where those teams sit in the net. Alabama, Vandy, and Arkansas.
Alabama's 22nd, Vanderbilt's 14th, and Arkansas is 24th.
Yeah. So technically, according to the net, Arkansas is the worst of those three teams.
Yeah, Vanderbilt is listed as the best team. So 1-2.
But you pick your
winner. But you pick your winner.
Okay.
Or 2-1, but you risk losing one of those games that you know you really don't want to lose.
Okay, I'll answer that. When we come back, we also have a text message we'll get to as well with some questions there. We will wrap up the show with that right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we are wrapping up the show, wrapping up our basketball conversation where Christian proposed a question that we'll answer here on the way out. As we've been talking a lot of the back half of Auburn basketball's SEC schedule, halfway through, nine games in, nine games to go, 5-4 so far in SEC play. And Christian's question was, over the next three games of Alabama at home, Vanderbilt at home, and Arkansas on the road, that's what you have this Saturday, next midweek, and next Saturday. Would you rather go 1-2 over those three games, but pick the game that you win, or go 2-1 and you get what you get? A couple of people have texted. All of them have said 2-1, which is what my answer is as well. I understand that some people would say would love to win Alabama, would love to win Vanderbilt, or would love to go on the road to beat Arkansas, go 2-0 against the Hogs, right? Totally understand. My feeling is Auburn needs to go 2-1. Again, for me to feel good about them as a competitor in this league, in a team that can make a run in the NCAA tournament, I need to see them go 2-1 over the next three games. I think this determines your season.
Yeah.
I think this determines how good and how far you can go in March.
Well, that's the answer that it should be. I got one from my personal text of, 2-1. However, I immediately typed out 2-1, and before pressing send, I thought about it for a second or two.
Which sure.
I feel like that was more so the way that I was hoping for. It's probably a better answer of before Tennessee. Would you rather go 2-2 and you go 1-1 at home and, and 1-1 on the road, like you get a big road win or whatever the case may be. But 2-1 should definitely be the answer. And did you get the news from Auburn football?
Oh, how about that? Looky there. Auburn signs a kicker from down under, from Australia.
From Melbourne, Australia.
Melbourne. That's so cool. There you go. On a little early National Signing Day news, Auburn gets a kicker from Australia. Gotta love it. All right, we're out of time. We gotta go. We're back tomorrow, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Also, Double D, Daryl Dappertz, joins us as well. That's 2-4 here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.